All right, we're back. My name is Steve Elzinga. I'm doing this class. It's really coaching basics part two. If you're taking part two, that means you took part one already. You learned all about non-directive coaching. That's the heart of coaching. That's what separates it from mentoring and teaching and counseling and all these other things, but it's not always that simple. And there is a bit of directive. Last session we looked at how coaching can be totally directive. In fact, probably the word coaching first came from a more directive kind of trying to influence someone else. It comes from the sporting world. And if you've had children in sports, then you know that coaches can be very directive. You know, not only do they direct the game days, you know, they, you know, call plays and tell kids what to do, but they direct the practices. And in the practice, generally, the coach is trying to get the kids to learn particular skills, and they go over and over and over these skills again and again so that they become natural, so they become instinct. So in the heat of a game, you know, there's fans, there's people cheering, you know, in some ways there's a lot of pressure on a kid in a game, but a lot of times kids don't feel the pressure because they just do what they've been taught. They've gone over these things so many times that their bodies just naturally kick the ball, hit the ball, whatever it is, whatever sport you're playing, they just naturally do it without all kinds of thinking. So that's where the word coaching first originated. And then as it morphed into this more life coach term, it became more and more and more and more non-directive, because there were other words like teaching that you could use instead of coaching. So there are times when a more directive approach is helpful. The problem with being directive or too directive is people lose motivation. We've all been taught or told what to do. And then we go and try it. It doesn't work. And so we say, forget it. I'm going to go do something else. And so that's the problem with anyone telling you how you ought to operate. Now, again, last time I said if you're highly motivated and you believe the coach knows what he's talking about and you really want that skill, then you might have the motivation already. And so you might succeed with a more directive approach. But for most people, what's needed is more of a semi-directive approach. Semi-directive approach. Well, what is semi-directive? Okay, are you ready for this? This could get complicated. Semi-directive is when the coaching is sometimes directive and sometimes non-directive. That's the technical definition. Sometimes it's directive. Sometimes it's not directive. Sometimes it's one or the other, or one followed by the other, and then back to the other. Sometimes it's sort of a combination of the two at the very same time. Well, is semi-directive coaching in the Bible? We saw that directive coaching is in the Bible. Is semi-directive coaching in the Bible? 1 Corinthians 11, verse 1, we looked at that under directive, if you'll recall. Paul says, follow my example as I follow the example of Christ. Now, I used that as a directive example, but I think it's really more of a semi-directive. I mean, Paul is being specific in terms of who you're following. You know, I follow Christ, you follow me as I follow Christ. In other words, i.e., follow Christ. But follow Christ in what? I mean, Jesus did a lot of things. He said a lot of things. I mean, what specific things are we talking about? Should we all change water into wine? Should we, you know, what should we do? Because Jesus' day 2,000 years ago in the Middle East is way different than our day. So how do I, you know, Jesus washed the disciples' feet. Should I wash my friend's feet? We don't do that anymore. So there has to be a little interpretation here. You know, I'm trying to follow Jesus, but I have to figure out what that exactly means. So if I am the client and I am trying to follow Jesus, I don't know exactly what that means. I mean, I have a little idea, but I don't know specifically. So now I have to figure some of these things out, and maybe I need a coach to help me figure out what does it mean for me today in my life, in my situation right now, to wash someone's feet. Now, a coach could come alongside and try to help me figure that out, but it's not very directive. I mean, it's a directive in general. I'm following Jesus and not somebody else. But exactly what I should do, I don't know. And so maybe now I need a coach to start asking questions about my life and my time, you know, the people in my life, so I can figure out how this works. Matthew 22:36-42. Someone comes up to Jesus and said, "Teacher, which is the greatest commandment in the law?" You know, the law of the Ten Commandments. "Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. And a second, love your neighbor as yourself." So that's the summary of the Ten Commandments. The Ten Commandments are more specific. Like, there's 10 things. The summary summarizes the 10 into 2. So the 2 are more general. What does it exactly mean that I should love the Lord with all my heart and with all my soul and with all my mind? What does that mean? What should I exactly do today? As I go about my life today, what should I do? What does it mean for me personally? I don't know. See, I mean, you know, I know enough, right? I'm supposed to love God above all, not other things. But I don't know specifically what that means for my life. So it's sort of semi-directive. It's directive in a way. I should love God. I should love others. I shouldn't hate them. So it's directive, it gives me a direction to go. But I don't have a specific thing that I want to do. I don't have a specific plan. I don't know how to manage that plan. So now I maybe need your traditional non-directive coaching to figure out the particulars. Semi-directive coaching in the Bible, John 14:12. "Very truly I tell you," Jesus says to his disciples, "whoever believes in me will do the works I have been doing." Here they are. This is what I've been doing. "And they will do even greater things than these, because I'm going to the Father." So Jesus is saying, look, I do these things. I help people. I heal people. I talk. I share the gospel. And you're going to do those things, but you're going to do even greater things. In other words, I'm not even giving you the total example of which you're supposed to follow, because you're going to go beyond me. So sometimes that's what a coach will do. A coach will show, you know, enough for the client to get going in a certain direction. But the client is going to take, you know, what is taught, what has been learned, and carry it beyond. And the client is going to do that. So there's a part of it that's very directive, but there's a part of it that is not directive. Well, why is semi-directive coaching needed? Semi-directive coaching, why is it needed? Okay. Often a client needs a basic amount of directing, learning, and information before being able to take a more active role in the progress towards some goal. So years ago, I lived in Vancouver, British Columbia, and I owned a 21-foot sailboat. And one day, Henry Ryan, a president Henry Reinga of Christian Leaders Institute. This was years and years ago. He came to visit. He was there for a few days. And I said, hey, Henry, let's go sailing. He had never been sailing before, so I took him sailing. And Vancouver Harbor, beautiful harbor. The sun was shining. The mountains and the city were all around us. And there was a pretty good wind. And so I took him out, and, you know, I'm holding the tiller, and I told him to hold the sheet, which is the rope that holds the sheet, the sail. And we're flying across the harbor, and we're having a good time. And then at some point I said, okay, Henry, it's your turn. I want you to take the tiller. Now, I could have just handed him the tiller, and I would have hold the rope or the sheet, you know, the sail. And I could have said, you know, just do the best you can. But I gave him one little piece of information. I said, okay, you're going to have to try to figure out which way to go with the rudder to turn the boat, because it's not what you think. You're going to pull it this way, and it's going to turn the other way. Okay, so it's going to be confusing at first. You have to feel it. Eventually, you'll feel it, and it'll be okay, you know. But, so, you know, experiment, go wherever you want to go. You have the tiller, you're the captain, you do what you want to do. Wow, yeah, but I've never sailed a sailboat. That's okay, you'll figure it out. But there's one thing I got to tell you. When we turn around, like we're going in this direction and we want to go the opposite direction, when we turn around, do not turn away from the wind. Because if you turn away from the wind, what will happen is the wind will have the sail. The sail will be pushing out, and there's an aluminum bar that holds the bottom of the mainsail. And the wind is pushing it out this way. And if you turn away from the wind, eventually you're going to turn, and the wind is going to immediately fill up the other side, and that aluminum bar that holds the sail is going to come flying across the, you know, where we're sitting. And, you know, and if we don't duck, that thing is going to hit you in the head, and it could kill you. It comes across violently. Now, if you turn into the wind, you're going to turn around, you turn into the wind. Because if you turn into the wind, the sail is full this way, and then when you're into the wind, the sail is not full of air at all. And it's sort of straight, and it's just fluffing a little bit, so you have time to get out of the way, and then it gradually fills and it goes to the other side. So this is the only information I'm going to give you. Other than that, you are free. You are the captain. Do as you please. And so he did. And at first he was unsure, you know, I don't think I can do this. Within 10 minutes he had it figured out. See, and that's semi-directive. I'm giving you enough information to get started, or at least enough information to not be dangerous. But I'm not giving you all the information so that you can have the joy of discovering things for yourself. There's probably no greater joy than that. Figuring out things for yourself. You can see it in children. When a child figures something out, you know, for the most part, we direct, we correct, we're telling children about everything. All right, you got to take a bath, take your shoes off, your socks, your pants, your shirt, your hat, your underwear. And we go right down the list. We could just say, well, take all your clothes off. But no, we direct them at every little point. And then kids end up resenting that. I can do it myself, you know, a 3-year-old says. With pride. And that's exactly what happens in coaching. So sometimes you have to give enough information, though, to get started. If you're going to teach someone how to play the piano and you just, you know, well, here it is, start playing. It's going to be a long time before they figure anything out, but you show them. You know, I know you see all these keys, but they're really only 8 keys. There's a pattern here. And this pattern gets repeated over and over again. So instead of looking at a keyboard that's, you know, like 3-4 feet wide, it's really only about 8 inches wide. And if you learn what's there, you'll learn what's over the whole thing. So a lot of times there's just a little bit of information, a little bit of skill that you have to teach someone, and now they can be free to figure some things out themselves. Why is semi-directive coaching needed? Number two, often in directive-only coaching, the client can lose motivation if the progress to a particular goal is too structured or too directive. Too much motivation is supplied by the coach and not enough by the client. So I retired from my church a while back, and I had an associate that worked with me, and he loved pottery. And before that, I found an old kiln somewhere for $80. I bought it. And then I found the potter's wheel. This is kind of a made-up homemade thing for like $50. And so I bought it because I was always sort of interested in pottery. I never really did it, but I was always interested in it. I always thought I'd love to do like the 7 days of creation in pottery. You know, what would day one look like? What would day two look like? So anyway, I always had this vision. So I bought this stuff, but I didn't know how to use it. Well, he saw all this equipment and he said, oh, you know, he loved pottery, did it in college. And so he set a thing up at the church and all this stuff. And he would teach a class. And I remember just, you know, stopping in once when he was teaching a class. But his style was so directive. You know, you had to start with a pinch pot. And, you know, this is what clay is. And this is the term for clay. This is where clay comes from. And all these details. You know, the people had to sit and listen for a half an hour before they even touched the clay. And I'm like, I could never stand that. And we got to make pinch pots, and we've got to, you know, it's like, okay, I can't. And the names, of, you know, greenware and something else and on, and the glaze and all the things. So I remember sneaking in there one day, and there was some clay, and I just threw it on the wheel, you know. All right, I'll put it on the wheel and put some water, turn it on, and, you know, I got the thing going, and, you know, I'm having fun, and then, you know, it's rising, and, you know, now you're going to make the hole, and I put my thumbs in there, and it got to a certain point, and then it folded over. I got about 3/4 of the way towards a really nice pot, and then it folded over. So I did it again, folded over, did it again, folded over. Now, for me, my learning style especially, is I like to figure things out on my own as much as I can. And then when I fail or I fail at some point, all I want is a helpful hint, a little direction when I'm in trouble. And that's the way I play chess, you know. You play chess until you're in trouble. Now, what do I do? So now, not everyone has my personality, but you're going to meet people who have that personality. And if you're too directive with someone who likes to learn on their own, they're not going to listen. They're not going to learn anything from you. And often, you know, especially that kind of personality, they will lose motivation if you become too directive. Why? You're treating me like a 3-year-old. I mean, even children don't want to be treated this way. You constantly tell a child what to do. Well, what does a child want to do? I can do it myself, Mommy. I can do it myself. The pride of doing things for yourself. You can see it in a 3-year-old. So semi-directive coaching honors that desire that people have to discover and figure out things for themselves. Now, as I said before, sometimes you need to be a directive enough to get them started, or you're leaving them to total absolute frustration, and then they lose motivation too. So you can lose motivation either way. You know, being too directive, and now I'm being treated like a 3-year-old, and I'm not going to do it then. Or you can be left too much to your own abilities, and then you don't have any success, and then you quit too. So that's why the semi-directive coaching is such a beautiful marriage of these two things. But it's a bit of an art, right? You have to know who you're dealing with and what the topic is. Some skills lean more towards direction than others. And some personality types lean more towards, you know, wanting to be directed or wanting to be enabled. Okay? So this whole thing is a bit of an art. Why is semi-directive coaching needed? Number three, semi-directive coaching can be more responsive to the client's needs. Directive when needed and non-directive when needed. So I guess that's what I've been saying here the last few minutes. Depending on the client, right? Their personality type. You know, you don't want to push someone that wants to... You don't want to direct someone that wants to do things on their own. But they haven't been able to do it, see? So they need someone to help them process things, to figure things out. But they don't want someone giving them the answers. But others do. Right? The personality type, look, you are gifted at something and I'm really motivated. I want to learn it. So you can be a little more directive. And so you can be responsive to the personality type or the situation. Because sometimes it's not just personality. It might be a situation. In some things, I want to learn on my own. And in some things, I want someone to show me exactly what it is, how to do it. Why is semi-directive coaching needed? Number four, semi-directive coaching can speed up the coaching process while still maintaining most of the benefits of non-directive coaching. Okay, so if I'm going to teach you the piano, if I have to, I have to let you figure out everything on your own, it's going to take you 20 years to learn how to play the piano. Let me show you a few things. Okay? Let me show you the notes. Let me explain what a chord is. Let me show you one chord. Let me show you two chords. Let me show you three chords. And once you understand that, you have the basic building blocks for everything. With three chords, you can play 100 different songs. But I need to show you those three chords first, and then I'm going to let you try to figure out how the chords work. You know, because you play a chord that goes with part of the song, and then the song goes along, and all of a sudden, well, you should really switch chords, or it's not going to sound good. Now, I could tell you where to do that, or I could tell you the first time, or the second time, but then I can let you fumble along and then ask, does that sound right? Should you change, or does that sound right? And then the person goes, well, I don't know. Well, do it again. And eventually, they're starting to learn on their own. Well, that doesn't quite sound right. Yeah, so maybe we have to change. Where do you think we have to change? So if I can be less directive with some of the more advanced stuff, you know, then I'm helping them sort of hear with their ears what's really going on. And that, in the long run, is going to help them become a better piano player. And this is true about any subject. Number five, semi-directive coaching can supply the Christian worldview foundation if that is missing in the client. Okay, you remember when you took the first course, I told you that this non-directive coaching is really great. You know, let the client figure out what they want to do. Let the client try to figure out how, you know, with the plan of to do what they want to do, and then help the client manage the process of actually following through with the plan, with what they say they want to do. Okay. And I said that clients, you know, generally can figure this out. You know, with proper questions, they can sort of figure this out. But I said there's one sort of exception. The thing that you're assuming is that they have a Christian worldview. See, if they don't have a Christian worldview, I, as a coach, I might be helping them figure out how to do something that isn't legal or isn't moral or isn't something that I, as a coach, would support at all. You know, like, you know, how my client can get a divorce as quick as possible. Well, no, I'm not for that. So when a client doesn't have the Christian worldview, I'm not going to just let them figure out what to do with their life, because they don't have the worldview from which to figure it out. So with semi-directive coaching, see, okay, you've come to me, you want to figure out your life, you're not happy. Okay, there's something we need to figure out first, and that's your worldview. So now I can be directive. I can share the Christian worldview, you know, in a winning, positive way. And you know, so now I'm being more directive. I'm being more, you know, I'm teaching more. This is what the Christian faith is. This is why I think it's a great idea. This is the benefits towards the Christian worldview and how it will help you figure out what you really want to do in life. So I'm being directive with that part that you don't have so that we can be non-directive after that. Well, I hope you can see the positive to this. I mean, you know, again, I'm stepping into the waters of a more directive approach from the first course that you took. And I do it with, again, with a little trepidation, a little fear, because I don't want you to lose that whole non-directive coaching thing as we sort of put our toe into the water of the semi-directive coaching. Because, and why? It's because the world is so full of directive coaching. You know, bosses telling people what to do, parents telling children what to do, coaches, you know, on the sporting field telling players what to do, governments telling people what to do. Now news is telling us what we need to do. So we live in a very directive world, and we have conflict because of it. So you know. But what I'm trying to say is there often is a place for the directive alongside the non-directive. So in our next session, we'll start looking at, well, how do we exactly do this? Until then.